Brenda Jacob, welcome to the Publix Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
We're going to focus most of this interview on gun-related issues, but I do want to touch briefly on the news of the week. Governor Dan McKee is facing his first ethics controversy of his administration. This involves his chief of staff, Tony Silva, and how Silva and some members of his family were promoting a project, a development project on some mostly wetlands property in Cumberland. At first, Governor McKee said this week that he was told by the State Department of Environmental Management that there was no undue influence. And then a day later, on Wednesday, Governor McKee said he was asking Attorney General Peter Noronha to do an investigation of this issue just for the purpose of transparency and to assure Rhode Islanders that nothing wrong happened. As a Rhode Islander, are you satisfied with how Governor McKee has handled this issue?
Let me go back from the gun community perspective with the governor. We were kind of excited when he first became governor, but then we're very quickly disappointed because, you know, this goes back to politics as usual in Rhode Island. And I think him getting hung up so soon in an ethics issue, it's not surprising being that it is Rhode Island. What happens with us is we had really thought he was going to try and rise above politics as usual in Rhode Island. And we were hoping that he really was going to be a champion for small businesses and, you know, put Rhode Islanders first. So it is disappointing that he's already tied up in something like this.
In this episode, Governor McKee said the State Department of Environmental Management reports no undue influence. Governor McKee says he was all right with his chief of staff, Tony Silva, taking a meeting with the mayor of Cumberland. So what specifically do you find objectionable in this episode?
Well, first of all, it's a wetlands issue. And you know that as firearm owners, we're very concerned about the environment. We do have a lot of close dealings with DEM, so we find it, you know, disturbing that they actually are going to let something like this happen or on wetlands property. That's where we stand from on a conservation standpoint. We just don't feel any wetlands should ever be infringed upon.
Okay, and we should note that this property in question is now going to be donated by the Silva family to the town of Cumberland for conservation. Let's shift to more gun issues. Brenda, you wear a lot of different hats, so I'd like to just briefly go over your different titles and roles. You are president of the Federated Rhode Island Sportsmen's Club. You are secretary lobbyist of the Rhode Island Rifle and Revolver Association. And last but not least, you are president of the Ocean State Junior Rifle Association. So tell us, how did you become a gun enthusiast?
It started as a kid. I was on a rifle team when I started on a rifle team when I was 11. So I was a competitor. I competed with a 22 long rifle and high power rifle. At that time, I was competing with an M14. I used to represent Rhode Island out at the Nationals. We used to travel to West Point, the Coast Guard Academy, MIT Academy, and out to Ohio for the national championship. So I represented the state of Rhode Island for about 15 years as a competitor. And now I have switched over and now I've been coaching.
To bring things into the present, we've read in news accounts about how gun sales are through the roof, not just in Rhode Island, but around the country. What is your explanation for that?
Well, I think a lot of people are concerned about their safety with all of the things happening in the world and in the country. And, you know, we've had an influx in Rhode Island as well. In the past 5 years, you know, our sales have also gone up. But especially in 2020, we had a huge increase in gun sales. And I think most of those sales were fear-based and wanted to protect their family. And a lot of people went into gun stores feeling like they would never have ever purchased a firearm. But then in light of all of the things that were happening, they felt that they needed to take those extra measures to be able to protect their family.
Does this proliferation of guns make us more safe or less safe as a state and as a nation?
I feel it makes us more safe. I feel that because the criminals, if you look at the criminal aspect, they're not going to know which houses have firearms in them. So it makes them less likely, you know, to do break-in and entry. entries. We've had a lot of people that have also gotten concealed carry permits. So that also is a deterrent, I think, when it comes to crime.
We also know that the United States has much more gun violence than other kind of industrialized democracies. Why do you think that is?
Well, a lot of that goes back to criminals and repeat offenders. Even in this state, we find that most of the people that have been hung up in gun-related crimes or violent crimes have actually been let out of prison, and then they go on to become repeat offenders. And then the other problem that we have is most of your gun crime is specific to certain regions, mostly cities. So when you look at the country as a whole and on a map and you see the hot points for gun violence, it's mostly the inner cities that are the crime, hubs.
What should be done about that? I mean, it seems that most gun deaths, as you say, are either from suicide or related to the poor parts of American cities. How can that level of violence be reduced?
Well, I feel like we don't put enough emphasis on our youth, especially in inner cities. I think that we need to have more accessible programs for kids to become good citizens before they have to be forced into crime or become criminals. I don't feel like we use enough of our resources. We spend so much money on politicking and lobbying when that money really could be better used if we made some really nice programs for especially inner city youth. I also feel like defunding the police is a mistake. I think we need to, in fact, increase funding for the police. I think we also need to, work on programs for them to be better able to cope with some of your mental illness issues, and to be to form better relationships with the inner cities.
I'd like to come back to your view of guns as a form of self-defense. This is something we hear from gun rights supporters a lot, that, I think it was someone with the NRA said years ago, a good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun. But the typical gun owner does not have the same kind of training as police to respond in a very confused, hectic situation. So is that really a fallacy to think that the typical gun owner can make a positive difference while intervening in a violent crime?
I really feel like that is misinformation, because most gun owners, they spend the time to get training. They spend the time practicing. They do spend time. And a lot of us, we offer a lot of classes that help to mitigate any type of accidental shooting. So I feel like that actually is misinformation. The other thing is we spend a lot more time. We don't brandish. We don't, people don't know most of the times that we have firearms. And a lot of times that again, is a deterrent, because people, especially like out in the more rural areas, we have a lot less crime out there. We have a lot less break-in and enterings because people don't know what they're going to come across. So I may not even ever have to use a firearm in self-defense, because I've already provided that deterrent just by criminals not knowing if I am armed or if I have a firearm or what type of self-defense I will be using.
But isn't there a huge difference between educating people about gun safety and doing shooting practice at a range and the kind of active shooter training that police and military take part in a regular basis? Isn't there a huge chasm between that?
Well, it's not like when you are defending your family that you're involved in an active shootout. That's a whole different scenario. A lot of times just having your firearm and being able to display or say you have your firearm is a deterrent. That's backed up with fact, because you can find concealed carry holders are less likely to fire their firearm. And you can see that by the different studies they have as far as concealed carry holders being involved in shootouts and being involved in crime.
Are there any reliable figures on how often guns are used for self-defense in Rhode Island?
There are not. And that's one of the reasons that we have tried so hard to get the Attorney General to help us by doing a report on any gun-related incidents and crimes so that we can have more fact-based information.
At the federal level, gun rights advocates have traditionally opposed efforts by the Centers for Disease Control to do more research on gun use and gun violence. Do you think there should be more of that kind of research at the federal level?
Well, the problem is with a lot of these reports is that they take the data and then they twist it around and then they use it against us. So that's why a lot of gun owners are a little bit leery of those types of reports, because that's not used to benefit the society as a whole. It's used more for political gain. And that's what makes a lot of them leery to have those types of reports done. But there are good reports out there. Actually, we use FBI reports, we use uniform crime reports, we use CDC reports. So we do a lot of digging, and we don't use the NRA per se as our information hub, because a lot of times that's also used against us. So we make sure that in Rhode Island, in our groups, we make sure we independently look for reliable data.
The NRA started out as a sporting organization, gun safety, shooting targets, that kind of thing, and then it morphed over time into a much more political organization. Are you comfortable with the profile of the NRA in recent years?
So NRA, a lot of people don't realize, is actually three different entities. So you have the NRA membership base, that's like the general how it started. And then they added a whole education department, and that's where instructors like myself get training and coaching skills. There's a whole separate entity that's set up for the education and training. And then the other branch of NRA is ILA, which would be your political arm. When we look at, as NRA members, when we look at NRA, we look at it, we know there's three different branches. They've been under a microscope lately too. And there's some NRA members that aren't, happy with how upper management's working. But as far as the political aspect of the NRA, we're happy with the NRA. As far as the educational and training side of NRA, we're also happy with them on that front too.
As it stands, the law in Rhode Island says that if there's a child 16 or under in a home, I believe a legally owned gun has to be stored in a gun safe. Are you okay with that, or does the state need more stringent laws regarding the safe storage of guns?
I believe that that's an overstep on this, on the state. I can tell you as a kid growing up, we were taught very young not to touch firearms. Our parents were very cautious about how the firearms were stored. And you'll find that, anybody who owns a gun, they're very cautious about it. Legally owns a gun, they're very cautious. They're very aware and conscious of that firearm being in their house. I don't feel that locking the guns up, we all have safes, That's a huge thing, because we all invest a lot, and that's the right thing to do. But to tell us that we can't even have one defensive firearm that we can have handy, I think is really an overstep. And I don't think that at the end of the day that it's really going to make Rhode Island safer.
That's all the time we have, so we need to leave it there. Brendan Jacob, thank you for joining us as our guest this week.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.